tune in, plug in, drop in. That's the new Timothy
that's
Leary.
The new one? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think that's right.
Tune in, plug in, tune in, drop in, plug in, get in.
Fit in.
Fit in.
Zoom
sit
in.
Sit in. That was more Timothy Leary.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Was Timothy Leary married? Or did he date Janis Joplin or somebody?
They had a lot of free love, right? So at the very least, he had he got some action.
Maybe we'd do an episode that's just the free love movement, since everybody was sleeping with everybody.
Yeah.
And be like, there's no particular pairing to look at. Just a bunch of fucking going on.
Oh Lord.
Yeah, with no consequences.
That's like when we do David Bowie, it's going to be a minute because he is sleeping with so many people.
I can't wait for the Bowie episode.
I'm very.
We might have to do multiple Bowies.
We might have to because it's like intense.
Bowie and Iman. Bowie and Mick Jagger. Bowie and whoever else was
in the
room
that night.
Well, his
first wife was really like instrumental in his life.
Well.
Not, no pun intended, but she was...
His first wife was a guitar?
but she made David Bowie. She helped make David Bowie, like, what he is. But anyway, this is not
Sounds
an episode
like
about David Bowie.
Yeah, but it's turning into it. Please go on.
No, right? Let's talk about David Bowie.
Surprise, different episode for you. No, the title doesn't match, but you're getting something else.
Well, look, one day we will do David
Look,
Bowie.
We let our hearts guide us in this podcast.
We do research and then we come and talk about something we know nothing about.
Yeah,
that's a great podcast, right?
Finished that one yet. Man. Well, look, we got some important housekeeping to do at the beginning of this show because, once again, tragically, we've got to go sit down in Corrections Corner.
You're such a loser.
Yeah, this one's on me, I guess, although I was trying to dig up the source that misinformed me, and I couldn't find it, so maybe it was me, but I still think it was just written wrong somewhere out there, because I don't make mistakes.
Oh, wow.
No, I do, and here's one I made. We had an episode recently about Sid Vicious and Nancy Spungen. If you haven't heard that one, check it out. It's a wild ride, but near the end... talking about some other band members from different bands, and the name Jerry Only came up. And I said he was the drummer from the Misfits, and punk fans across the globe cringed and passed out. Because Jerry Only was the bassist for the Misfits, duh.
Oh,
obviously.
Man. Hate getting shit like that wrong, too.
And such an insult
so
to Jerry Only, too, because, you know... bassists are one thing, but a drummer, come on.
Damn. Ice cold.
Look, you gotta, drummers can take it. I had a friend and I would go watch him play and only watch him because I swear this guy didn't have a brain in his head, but he had a brain separate for each limb because they all just operated independently of each other and made this incredible music. I'd never seen somebody drum like that. And the coordination, making all four, you know, two hands and two feet all do a different thing at the same time is insane to me. I'm trying to get my fingers to do different things and they're all tripping over each other. I can't imagine being a good drummer. Good drummers are really impressive.
It's true.
So there, I insulted drummers and I lifted them up a little bit too. That's what we do here on Ridiculous Romance.
We kick you and then we help you back up.
Yeah. And yes, so we want to thank at Old Timey Cartoon Villain for catching that one for us.
Amazing.
Staying sharp. Jerry Only would be proud.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and with apologies to Jerry Only, who I know is a longtime listener of the show.
Big fan.
But that's not all. We've also got a mail call.
Mail.
Awesome.
This one is from Jamie Samarge, who wrote, during the episode about Nesbitt White and Thaw, which now that I write that out, looks like a law firm. But anyways, that's true.
Come down to Nesbitt White and Thaw. Have you assassinated your wife's lover?
We've spent a lot of time defending ourselves. Now let us defend you.
If you need to escape the law, call Nesbitt White and Thaw.
Perfect. So yeah, where was I? When you all were describing Stanford White, the first image that popped in my head was Dr. Robotnik from Sonic the Hedgehog.
Perfect.
Love it. So through that whole episode, in my mind, was Dr. Robotnik in old-timey clothing doing all those things. Awesome.
That's pretty impressive.
That's pretty close. He did kind of look like Robotnik.
Big, giant red mustache. Mm-hmm. Yeah. His pants pulled up too high. He trapped animals in little robots. Yeah, definitely.
It all tracks.
Yeah.
It all tracks. But did Dr. Robotnik ruin 378 young women?
Oh, God, I hope not.
That would make... Stanford White is worse than Dr. Robotnik.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Otherwise, I need to really reevaluate the time I spent with the Sonic the Hedgehog games.
What a weird character trait to give this
villain. Somebody should inform Jim Carrey what he's representing.
Right.
But no. That's awesome. Thanks, Jamie, for reaching out and giving us that
laugh. Yeah, that was awesome. Yes. Yeah. He also gave us a bunch of great suggestions for future shows, so thank you for that as well.
Indeed. So now that we've got all that out of the way.
Yeah, is the house clean now?
I think the house is as clean as it's going to get, which is its usual state.
Yeah.
At any given time, our house is as clean as it's going to get.
And that's not very clean. Spoiler alert.
Look, we're working on it. It's a never-ending project. You all know.
Everybody
knows.
Everybody gets it.
So with the house clean, we are here today to talk about Amenhotep III and his wife, Queen Tia.
Yes. This is a BC power couple of epic proportions.
They reigned over a golden period in ancient Egypt, and she was the mother of the next pharaoh, the grandmother of Tutankhamun. I believe we all heard of King Tut. Notorious Batman villain. And T.A. was also very influential in foreign relations. And together, they had quite an influence on ancient Egypt. Hey, guys, this is an ancient Egyptian story. And you know what that means? There's not a whole lot of documentation about what went on here. But we managed to scrape together a pretty solid story. And we're going to tell you all about these two. Coming up now.
Hey there, friends, come listen well. Eli and Diana got some stories to tell. There's no matchmaking or romantic tips. It's just about ridiculous relationships. A lover might be any type of person at all, an abstract concept or a concrete wall. But if there's a story worth a second glance, we'll put it in our show, Ridiculous Romance.
A production of iHeartRadio.
So, yes, let's talk about T.A. first. She was born around 1398 BC.
That's a long time ago.
That's a long ass time ago.
That is, well, okay, look, around 1398. If you're going to say around, just round it up to 1400, right? Come on, around. Well, if you just, you know, if you're ballparking, why ballpark such a weirdly specific number?
Well, everything in ancient Egypt is maybe this, I feel like, so.
Yeah.
I guess they got some DNA evidence now from mummies and stuff that's like pretty like, oh, this is definitely something.
Yeah.
But most stuff is like, we're pretty sure and we're kind of guessing and this might be a thing. And we've been arguing about this for 100 years, you know.
Yeah. This also, just for a weird date perspective that just flashed into my mind, this is 1400 BC. That's roughly 1,600 years before Elagabalus, which was roughly 1,800 years ago now. Almost as long between Amenhotep and Tia and Elagabalus as Elagabalus to now. It's a long-ass time ago is what I'm saying.
Very cool.
Yeah.
A long-ass time ago.
Yeah.
So Tia's father was named Yuya. He was a provincial priest and commander of the royal chariots.
Cool job.
He owned a very large plot of land, so he was considered to be one of the wealthiest Egyptians of the time.
Wow.
So pretty sweet. Rich dad.
Yeah.
Her mother, Tuya, was like a lady-in-waiting type servant for the queen, Metemwia, who was married to Amenhotep II. They were very useful that way with the first, second, third. You always know who comes next and who went first. And some experts believe that T.A.'s parents were not Egyptian, but foreign-born, perhaps from Nubia. Some debate about that. But it's interesting because T.A., if she was foreign-born, it would have been unusual for her to be selected as a wife for the Pharaoh.
Ah.
So that's why they're kind of like, who know? We're not quite sure, but...
Right.
But yeah. So the whole family probably lived in the palace or near it and were in and out of there all the time.
Right.
And Tuya was also a priestess for the cult of Min, who was the Egyptian god of male sexual potency. He was usually worshipped around harvest time because it was all about fertility for everything, not just men, but also plants. And
right,
shit.
Right.
But of course, it was all about having kids too. Don't worry. he is depicted in human form, holding his erect penis in his left hand and a flail, which is a threshing tool, in his right hand.
That is.
Is that how you'd like to be memorialized?
You know, I wouldn't say memorialized. that is how I would like to be forgotten. Yeah, during the Festival of Min, they would play all these games in his honor, stark naked.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, you know, you got to show off to the god of fertility.
Let it flop around.
Yeah.
We want to see it.
Why hide it from this guy? It's his whole deal.
Right? He needs to be able to see what he's working with.
They have this game where they would all climb a huge tent pole.
Subtle.
Yeah.
Very subtle.
Worship of Min also involved eating Egyptian lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
Egyptian lettuce doesn't look like our typical iceberg or green leaf lettuce or anything like that. It's actually more of a tall stalk that grows straight up. And here's a cool little science trick about Egyptian lettuce. When you rub the leaves... A white milky sap, I guess, kind of erupts from its stalk.
What's all this?
And that goo is actually latex. Yeah. So it's just too many connections here.
A lot of penis stuff going on with this lettuce.
Yeah. We get it, lettuce, okay? Calm down a little.
It's a little much, really, right? To be honest.
Like, kind of a little heavy-handed there, a little on the nose. Just don't get it on my nose, please. Oh, God. Gross. No, you'd take this lettuce, you'd first offer it as a sacrifice, and then you'd eat it, because this lettuce was believed to be an aphrodisiac. Can you imagine the Egyptian lettuce and some French celery all... minced together in a salad.
I was gonna say, we really make vegetables do a lot of heavy lifting around here.
Hey, they are vegetables.
I gotta make you horny too.
You got an eggplant and a zucchini in there.
It's true.
You got yourself a nice fertile salad.
Who knows what could happen after a night of that kind of salad?
Ugh. Like the grossest salad of all time.
I know, like eggplant and what now? And now I'm not interested. Anyway, and women would touch the penis of Min on his statue in the hopes of getting pregnant and hoping for fertility. And that's still something that goes on today.
Like they touch the penis of the statue and they're like, I hope this works. Like they grossly misunderstand reproduction.
Min appears and he's like, you know, you have to do more than touch a penis, right? I'll send you a scroll about it.
But I think typically, no, it was just that they touched it mm-hmm. hoping that they would be fertile. Not that touching the penis would make them pregnant, but that it would give them luck in getting pregnant, right?
Yeah. Men would be like, oh, thanks for the handsy. I'll make you not barren.
Right.
So, yeah. So this is what T.A.'s mom's getting up to, I guess. And her dad, too, was also involved with men worship. So that's what they were getting up to.
Squeezing lettuce.
Playing games naked.
Yeah.
And... she grows up in the palace, and she has some options open to her. Apparently, Egyptian women, even though it was still a very patriarchal society in ancient Egypt, they had more options open to them than you might think. Noble women, like T.A., could be priestesses for a god or goddess, kind of like her mom was doing. They could be professional mourners, who were basically paid to, like, cry for people, I guess, and comfort the bereaved. I guess it's kind of like a funeral director now.
Oh, okay.
Like you would maybe prepare the body and stuff.
Gotcha.
I was kind of picturing someone who just got paid to like go to funerals.
To go to funerals and cry. Like, I kind of want that. Like, see if you can't get a bunch of actors to come and just look like so miserable.
Oh, my God. Like for people who are like, I guess, terrible people and have no one to come to their funeral. Like, that's so sad.
I know. After a life in the theater, I hope that actors do show up and cry at my funeral, but without being paid.
Yeah, but because for real. And then they're like, I can use your death as a impetus for tears in my auditions now on.
Yeah, I hope my death plays a strong part in somebody getting cast in Death of a Salesman one day in Angels in America.
There it is.
I got it because of Eli.
She could also choose to make perfume or weave textiles. Or she could be a dancer, musician, or acrobat employed at temples or at court.
Nice.
That was a noblewoman's pursuits.
Okay.
So she had some options, some career paths available to her.
Yeah, that's better than I had.
I know, right? I was like, there's some good options here, actually. But Tiye was destined to be queen, and she married Amenhotep probably when she was around 11 or 12 years old.
So you've got all these career options laid out for you, 9-year-old.
Exactly. Pick your path wisely.
You've got 1 year to decide. Oh, never mind. You're going to be married off to the king.
Yeah, pretty much.
No, that's fine.
Pretty
you could
much.
Do worse. And she did all right.
And of course, in ancient Egypt, you know, generally speaking, a lot easier to die in ancient Egypt than it is today. So they kind of were like, we got to get on with
it. Yeah, you're looking at your, you know, 50s is like old age, kind of.
Right.
Now, Amenhotep, we're not sure exactly when he was born. We're not even sure how old he was when he came to power. A lot of people think he was around 10 to 12. What some people thought maybe even as young as 2, but that doesn't really make a lot of sense with the story that follows.
Yeah, because he reigned for 38 years. So it's like, I think he was probably 10 to 12, just given the events of his life. That's my very professional, incredibly academic, Egyptology trained opinion.
We have recently watched The Mummy, so okay. We know what we're talking
about.
I'm
basically Rachel Weisz.
Well, plus also 2 years after he ascended to the throne, he married Tiye. Mm-hmm. So it's likely that he did that, you know, between 12 and 14 years old and not when he was 4.
Right. Because, you know, you get married when you're ready to have some kids. Like,
right.
That's the point.
Right.
So she was probably old enough to have children and he was probably old enough to have children. And back then, that meant you're 10 to 12.
Right.
Anytime between 10 or 12. If you were 13, it was like, wow, what a grandma.
Old maid. I guess this one's done. Amenhotep was the 9th ruler of the 18th dynasty, for those keeping track at home. He inherited a huge empire, too. This thing stretched from Syria to the Sudan. This was when Egypt was pretty broad in terms of how much land they controlled. During the 38 years of his reign, Egypt was stronger and more powerful than ever. During this time, they had bumper harvests, they had just years of peace, and a steady supply of gold coming in from the Sudan region.
I mean, very helpful.
Cash money. I mean, this was giving them the upper hand in all of their trade negotiations with other nations. Egypt is on top right now with Amenhotep in charge. Because, see, he was very innovative. He had a lot of foresight. He was a great sportsman. He loved the outdoors. Just an all-in-all pretty cool guy. No other pharaoh built as many temples and monuments as Amenhotep III, except for Ramses II, who ruled for a longer period. But like, look, nobody, Ramses II is the GOAT, right? I mean, we're talking
the
LeBron
big
of pharaohs. This guy was untouchable. So we're not here to compare to Ramses.
Right, okay. Ramses, take him. He's ruining the curve.
Yeah, yeah. So excluding Ramses II, Amenhotep was the bomb.
Yeah, some of his monuments and temples include the very famous Luxor Temple.
Didn't we see a Blue Man Group there?
We did. This is when ancient Egypt stretched all the way to Las Vegas, Nevada.
There's a big beaming light shooting out of the top of the pyramid.
Right. Anyway, so yeah, the actual Luxor, not the Vegas version, but the real Luxor Temple was Amenhotep III's contribution to the skyline of Egypt. And also the Colossi of Memnon.
Cool.
Which is pretty cool.
I wish we still had some Colossi.
I know, Colossi. What a dope word.
Okay, this seems like a good place for a break, right? And we'll be right back after this. And we're back.
So he's reigning over the golden age of Egypt. This is when the empire had, like, great influence on the international stage. It was at the height of arts and culture. And many pharaohs before this had depicted themselves as great warriors because Egypt was at war, you know, so you wanted a strong fighter as leader. But right now, Egypt's at peace. So during his reign, Amenhotep III was still like, listen, I'm a fighter, I'm a warrior, I can kick ass. But he was leaning more into his connections to the gods. And it was more about peace and maintaining order and that sort of thing. Because pharaohs would assume a five-name titulary, and it was meant to describe him and the program of his reign. So it'd be like if we elected Biden, but then his name became his entire agenda.
Right.
Which would be, wow, time consuming.
Yeah.
To say the least. So all pharaohs had like a million different names. Amenhotep's names were all about truth, law and order, and maintaining peace. And one of his favorite names for himself was Nimureya, which meant dazzling sun disk.
That word literally meant that then, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like now where, oh, my name is Nimureya. It means dazzling sun disk. Like, that's your own language at the time. That'd be like literally naming yourself dazzling sun disk, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's like Heather. Like, Heather means Heather.
Yeah.
Heather is the flower, you know,
right,
so
right,
it
right,
means
right,
what it
right.
is. That's it.
But more elaborate than that. It'd be like if your name was Soft Fluffy White Heather, and that was your full name.
Any Soft Fluffy White Heathers out there, shout out. But yeah, I think that's funny. I would love to go around being like, hey, I'm Dazzling Sundisk. It's great to meet you.
Oh.
I feel like the closest we got was like hippie names when they'd call themselves like Rainbow Sunshine or whatever. That's like the closest to Egyptian that we got with our names.
Dazzling Sundisk is just cooler than Rainbow Sunshine. Sorry.
Yeah, right.
I don't know why. I mean, Rainbow Sunshine is should be.
It's great.
You know, it's just that toxic masculinity. I'm just like, rainbows and sunshine, that's not cool.
No way, man.
That's not tough. That's lame.
But Dazzling Sundisk is
Dazzling Sundisk is badass.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
It's dazzling.
Yeah.
It's a disc.
It's a disc.
Which could be a weapon.
Discs are the coolest, like the manliest shape.
Oh, is that true?
Oh, yeah.
I would have thought this tent pole or whatever.
No. A disc like a
CD or like a discus. Or like a cookie.
You heard it here first.
Amenhotep's devotion to TA is pretty obvious in everything that he left behind. There's a historian, Lawrence M. Berman, and he said that, quote, no previous queen ever figured... Excuse me. Surely he's a British Egyptologist, right?
I don't know, but probably.
I'm gonna guess, and he can write in and correct us. Historian Lawrence M. Berman said, quote, no previous queen ever figured so prominently in her husband's lifetime. She's regularly featured on statuary, tomb and temple reliefs. He put her name on everything that his name was on, which is like crazy, unheard of.
Yeah, because women had to rely on men to record their lives. They didn't have any power over what was written down, what was put into the record, what was kept in the record, because people would erase. Speaking of Elagabalus, we talked about this in that episode where as a punishment, sometimes they'd be like, we're erasing you from history. We're just not going to write about you, and we're going to erase everything we previously wrote about you.
Yeah.
And that happened in ancient Egypt as well.
And then That's it. There's no Library of Congress. There's no tweets left over. There's nobody telling your story.
Well, that's why all these Egyptologists are like, well, maybe this and maybe that. Who knows?
Our best guess is that.
Yeah.
So
it was pretty cool that he put her name on shit. He wanted people to know about her.
And in statues in his mortuary temple, the royal couple, the two of them, are depicted on an equal scale. Each figure is the same size. And according to Egyptian artistic convention, this meant that they were equally important, because this was also very unheard of. Usually, the pharaoh and his wife, she'd be depicted much smaller than him. And so it was really striking, very different, that the two of them were seen as the same size. That meant something.
Mm-hmm. There's a private tomb scene in his tomb where she's depicted as a sphinx trampling enemies.
Awesome.
And this caught people's eye because usually only kings were depicted as sphinxes, first of all. And then also trampling enemies was a task more associated with men and with kings, not queens. So this is kind of a hint about how important she was politically. It wasn't just that Amenhotep was obsessed with her and like wanted to have her picture everywhere.
Right.
It was like the kingdom was like she was handling some business.
Yep. All this was meant to show that Tia was Amenhotep's divine as well as earthly partner. They were going to ascend into the heavens together, and it wasn't just about their bodies here on earth.
And they were both godlike.
Right.
They were living embodiments mm-hmm. of gods on earth.
She wasn't just some earthly hussy he picked up while he's in his human form. And get this, he even had a lake constructed in her honor in the 11th year of his reign that was 2 miles long, and they sailed its length in a royal barge so that everyone could see them sailing mm-hmm. on this lake. Look at my wife's lake I made. Who do you think made the lake? I'm wondering who dug, that seems like a lot of, you know what? It's got to be interns, right?
I was just about to say. I think it was probably some unpaid interns.
Unpaid interns, yeah.
But possibly they were well-paid workers. Sorry. I don't know. I don't know why I choked on that.
Oof. Another mighty civilization built on the back of unpaid interns.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Yep. A few years later, he had a second lake built for her, probably by the same interns, because you know how hard it is to get hired around
well,
here. Whoever made it through the program.
Yeah. It's
the
tough,
first time.
It's a tough program. Do you guys have job placement?
Oh, yeah, we got job placement.
Where can I get placed?
Right where you are.
Yeah, here.
Place your hands on this shovel.
Yeah.
And start digging, buddy. So, yeah, so she's got these two lakes, and the profits from the farmlands around the lakes were hers to spend as she wished. So she had an independent income, her own source of money and everything. So she was very independent, wise. She's very intelligent, strong, and fierce.
Yeah.
She was able to gain the respect of foreign dignitaries who were willing to deal with her directly when they came to talk to the pharaoh about business. They were willing to talk to T.A. instead.
Damn, so they show up and they're like, I'm here to do some business with the pharaoh. And somebody says like, well, he's actually busy right now. You're not going to like this, but all I've got available is like main wife, the queen.
You're like, Tia's here, amazing.
Tia's here, oh my God. Well, excuse me, I'm going to need a minute to kind of brush up a little bit. I'm going to straighten my shirt here, straighten my tunic.
Go get some frankincense from the car.
Yeah, so she was really active in foreign relations throughout her life. And speculation station. I think this is another reason they think maybe she was, her parents were foreign born. Like she had some ties to foreign lands. So
oh,
she
okay,
was more
sure,
interested
yeah.
in like what was going on over there and how they were reacting with Egypt and stuff. That's part of it. But
gotcha.
Don't know for sure.
She was also the first Egyptian queen to have her name recorded on official acts. She signed the bills. She said, and so saith I, Queen T.A., that from now on, unpaid interns are going to have to work a little harder around here.
Oh, no, T.A.
Well, you know, we don't have any evidence that she was a progressive leader.
Oh, no, none at all. None at all.
She'd write...
Yeah, she wrote a bill that said, I think it's... I've got it right here. I'll
okay,
read it.
Yeah, read it to me.
It goes, crow, clay pot, field of wheat, clay pot.
Uh-huh.
There's a cat. Uh-huh. There's... what else?
And a feather and a couple of snakes.
A feather. Yeah, there's a staff and then another clay pot.
Uh-huh.
Clay pot.
And then it's... And
raven.
And up above that, it says, nobody, colon, me, colon... Hieroglyphs.
Yeah, and that was a very seminal bill.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
I don't need to tell you guys.
Yeah, that was the...
Amazing.
Yeah, that changed ancient Egypt forever.
Oh, lordy. He even had a temple built for her where she was worshipped in the form of the goddess Hathor. Again, representing that she was part goddess now, not just some regular old lady.
Right.
And she even adopted Hathor's horn and disc as part of her own regalia. So, they were walking around like, we are part gods.
Yeah. Hot shit.
Hot shit.
Now, like most pharaohs, it's not like, I mean, what do you expect the guy to do? Only have one wife? No. He had a harem. pretty large. He married a couple daughters of the king of Babylon, you know, a daughter or two of Tushratta, the king of Mitanni in northern Syria. You know, he had some wives. A
couple others, yeah.
Yeah, kicking around. And that was pretty standard. Mm-hmm. You know, again, he's a pharaoh. He's got a lot to do and he's got like 50 years to live. So you got to get it in when you can.
Mm-hmm. And you want your...
You want
your
son line.
To,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Because otherwise, you know, your family tree had to have some branches.
Somewhere.
So he did that. But for Amenhotep, his favorite was definitely Tiye. She held the title of Great Royal Wife, while the others were just the king's wife. Pish posh.
That's still... I mean, among regular workaday Egyptians,
yeah.
You know, that's still pretty, wow. Yeah. But Great Royal was like, oh, shit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They had 6 children together, including the next pharaoh, Amenhotep IV. He changed his name to Akhenaten, and that would not be the last thing that he would change. But we will give him and his queen Nefertiti their own episode.
Oh, yeah.
And one of their daughters... One of Amenhotep and Tiye's daughters was Sitamen, and she was elevated to great royal wife around year 30 of Amenhotep's reign.
So she was the daughter of the pharaoh and then upgraded to great royal wife of her dad.
Yep. Pharaohs married their daughters and they married their sisters.
Yeah! You know, cultural differences, they span across time and... culture. It's just,
yeah.
One man's wife is another man's daughter, I guess. I don't know.
Well,
one man's wife is his own
true daughter.
Ooh. Yeah. Look, it was a long time ago.
And it was a common thing for pharaohs to do. The god Osiris married his sister Isis, and they had the first pharaoh together. So it was kind of like ordained that they should marry their sisters. Or daughters in order to keep the bloodline pure.
Yeah, right.
And commoners were kind of like, okay, because they were supposed to be gods and not people. So it was like, well, that makes sense. I mean.
Oh, gods can do it.
Yeah. They did not do it. It was not a common thing amongst regular old Egyptian people.
Civilians, yeah.
And merchants and stuff. They did not marry their family members and found it to be not a cool thing at all.
Yeah.
But they were like, pharaohs can do it. It's fine.
Sure.
No problem.
Who was the first Grossi who was like, oh, no, it's okay. The Osiris did it, you know?
Right.
And they're like, who's Osiris? He's like, oh, he's a god. You wouldn't, you know, it's too complex for a simple mind like yours to understand. But it's totally divine that I'm marrying my daughter, basically, is what I'm saying here.
It actually gets weirder, if I can tell you.
Go ahead.
The story is that Osiris died.
Uh-huh.
And Isis brought him back to life just long enough to conceive the first pharaoh.
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, you know, gods.
Yeah, they had their own rules. But interestingly, regular Egyptians would call their wife or husband, sister or brother, as a term of endearment.
Aw.
I was like, that would not work. Like, I'm sorry, but if you walked in and you were like,
hey, sis.
I'd be like, no, absolutely not. Apparently, it was just to clear it up, if anyone's wondering, because I did. I was like, why is that a good thing? But apparently it was meant to represent an egalitarian bond. Like, it wasn't just husband and wife anymore. They were, like, on the same level as each other. They had equal power in the relationship, sort of. And they were...
Yeah.
It's like a blood bond at this point rather than just a marriage bond.
I see.
The other reason why a pharaoh would marry his sister or his daughter was because royal daughters and princesses were not allowed to marry foreign princes because Egyptians felt that the other nations would, like, try to start some shit.
Yeah, yeah.
In their name kind of thing.
Which has happened.
Oh, yeah.
Historically,
sure.
For sure.
But yeah, so they weren't allowed to marry any foreign princes, but they also could not marry beneath their class. So there's no one else to marry, basically, but your father or your brother.
Limited window there
yeah.
for a princess. Another example reminds me of like Suleiman and the princes, where it's, you know, you were born into the best circumstances anyone could be born into. You're part of the royal family. And also that sucks for you.
Right.
Like you are kind of also, you got a nice place to live and you never want for, you know, food and shit like that. But the restrictions made things pretty dang rough.
Right.
You kind of got treated like shit because of these, like, you know, stodgy old rules.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up getting screwed by your brother.
Ew!
Ew.
So the pharaohs are marrying the daughters of other kings of other nations for the classic political reason that it would create friendly diplomatic relations between the two countries. Mm-hmm. But they would never reciprocate in the same way. They were like, I keep my daughters, and if they don't marry me, they don't marry anybody.
Damn.
Or they're going to marry my son. That's it.
So crazy.
So weird. But I guess it worked for a while. Egypt lasted a long time.
That's true.
And he elevated one other of his daughters to great royal wife as well near the end of his reign. So I believe he had four daughters and he married two of them.
At some point, he had commemorative stone scarabs distributed to everyone in the empire, extolling all of his accomplishments. So it was like the presidential plate
of
his day. You know, everybody, well, except everybody got one for free. You had to have one, and it listed all his accomplishments or various accomplishments on them. 123 of these scarabs have been found that talk about how, in the past 10 years, Amenhotep has killed 110 lions with his own arrows.
Ooh.
I wonder if environmentalist Egyptians of the day were like, that's terrible. The lion population has been dwindling. And we are driving them to extinction with this kind of behavior. And now he's celebrating it by posting his wooden scarabs all over town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a cuneiform somewhere.
Uh-huh.
They're tapping it out. Then they were like, I'm tired. That's what we should do. If you want to tweet, you should have to scroll it out into stone. You better mean that shit.
It says, nobody, colon.
Yeah, me.
Me, colon. Not a pharaoh killing off all these lions again.
Yeah. I just thought it was funny because it'd be like if a president was like, hey, I made four holes in one the other day and I want to tell everyone about it. Like, it's such a weird thing to do. But I guess it was, you know, it was like a newspaper of the day. Like, you were just kind of telling everybody what you'd been up to, I guess.
Yeah. And several more of these stone scarabs talk about the foreign princess Gilgupta that he will soon marry. And apparently she arrived at her new home with an entourage of 317 women.
Yeah, I was kind of like, man, who brings that many roommates with them?
She rolls deep.
She rolls deep. Yeah, I brought my entire sorority with me, if you don't mind. So I'll need my own, like, wing.
You know what? We'll just build a wing for you real quick. Can I get some unpaid interns over here, please? Okay, this feels like a good place for us to take a break. All right, welcome back to the show.
The next big event in Amenhotep's reign is in year 30. Because after 30 years of rule, a pharaoh in Egypt had to have a said festival. And this is like a religious jubilee. It's basically like celebrating that he's made it to 30 years, because that's unusual in ancient times. It's kind of meant to rejuvenate the pharaoh. He recommits to all the gods with, like, processions and offerings and sacrifices at all the temples and everything. And he was kind of also announcing his rise to full divinity from being a near god to now, like, a full god. And then after 30 years, you would have one every 3 to 5 years. So you had to wait a long time for your first one, but then you had them pretty regularly.
I like that they're like, holy shit, you stayed alive for 30 years? That is unheard of. That is so insane that nobody has stabbed you in the back yet. And you weren't, you know, dragged off and murdered in war, or like a scarab didn't, you know, crawl into your skin and burrow its way into your brain, which is from my studying of the mummy is very common.
Very common. Way to go.
And, you know, and then after that, like every 3 years, they're like, damn, still?
Oh.
You're still here? Let's have another party.
Shit. Yeah, may as well. Amenhotep had three said festivals, which was quite a few. Of course, again, Ramses holds the record for
of
the most.
Of course, Ramses. Obvi. We get it, Ramses. Okay. You're the, like, homecoming king of Egypt.
But Amenhotep had three. Pretty good. And he wanted them to be spectacular.
Yeah.
This is the Olympics of their time, I guess. They had to spend a bunch of money and build a bunch of shit. He had a lot of temples and statues built up and down the banks of the Nile. A lot of really cool, intricate ornaments and jewelry was created for the occasion. I'm pretty sure this is when he had the second lake built for Tiye, and they used it in the festival. He would change his costume at every major activity. So general cash money behavior going on here. He was throwing money around. He's changing clothes a bunch. He's dressed to impress. They got the artisans at work. Everyone's into it.
He had to go to the temples of the gods and knock on the doors with a mace and then enter, followed by Queen Tiye and his other wives. It's like a ritual thing.
Mm-hmm. And probably leave something there, I imagine. Some offering.
Yeah, a little gift.
Something. Thank you for 30 great years. Yes. Here's to 30 more.
Here, take my unpaid intern. I leave for you.
Right.
One major highlight was his coronation, right? Mm-hmm. In Upper Egypt, he wore a white crown. And in Lower Egypt, he switched to red. This was, you know, in honor of their leaders down there. They would wear red crowns. So it was sort of like, you know, like when president comes down south and puts on a cowboy hat. Or, you know, he goes to the Northwest and he wears tie-dye. You know, sort of acknowledging the regional culture.
It's like a bucket hat and at the Pike Place Market.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a Kangol hat on English Avenue.
Exactly. It's said that this festival lasted between 6 and 8 months. It's a pretty bomb-ass party.
Yeah.
What the longest party we had was like four
months?
Yeah. Nobody came.
Right.
It's just us.
But it was a party.
Yeah, it's always a party around here. After this, Amenhotep went from being a near god to being one divine, which meant that he had transcended, you know, his sort of like demigod status and was just straight up divinity at this point.
Mm-hmm. But even though he was a god, he still got sick.
What?
I guess because his poor weakly human body.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, those only last so long.
Right. And so his started to break down near the end of his life. Historians think he may have suffered from arthritis and that he had painful abscesses in his teeth. He had very worn, like, cavity-ridden teeth.
Ouch!
Dental issues back in the day. I mean, they're so upsetting now that it's like to think about back in the day when they didn't even know what to do about it. No Tylenol or nothing.
No.
Ooh! So, yeah, they think that he was suffering a lot the last few years of his life. And it has been suggested that T.A. was actually running things for a little while before his death. So maybe like a little bit of a Nancy Reagan situation where he was still out there waving, but she was the one making these decisions. Maybe that's when she started signing bills and stuff.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah. Someone's like, I don't know. This scarab clay pot staff doesn't look like the pharaoh's usual scarab clay pot staff. This looks like Queen Tiye's handwriting. he died probably around 50 years old.
But a sturdy rule, a sturdy 50 years of life.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, I would say he got in more in his 50 years than most of us get into 80 or 90.
Very true. I mean, he traveled that empire. He had a bunch of coronations. He went from being a near god to being a full god. Mm-hmm. I mean, who can say that?
A few dozen wives.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them his daughters.
Several children. Yeah, some of whom he married.
Yeah, several wives, several children, and then several wives again.
Gross.
It's just a cycle. Ugh, disgusting cycle.
Yeesh.
Hey, yay, yay. And T.A. outlived him by probably 12 years, and she continued to advise their son, Akhenaten, after he became pharaoh. His letters to Tushratta, the king of Menrati, speak very highly of T.A.'s influence. She even corresponded directly with Tushratta, who expressed hope that their friendly relations would continue under Akhenaten's rule.
Yeah, Akhenaten is known as the pharaoh who wanted to go from worshiping multiple gods, which Egypt was very comfortable with and used to, obviously, after many years of doing it, generations. He wanted to focus on one god, his favorite god, Aten. So he moved the capital from Thebes to Amarna because he just wanted to take them away from Amun was the main god, yeah. And he just was like, get away from that temple. Everyone's focusing too much on this god. Look at my god instead.
Uh-huh.
And she had a house in Amarna with him. So they're like, oh, she went with him. She was still involved with his life and his rule and everything.
Right.
So she was probably still advising him at this point.
Yeah. She's also depicted as having dinner with him and Nefertiti.
Mm-hmm.
And Akhenaten ended up keeping her quite close for a long time. And then she's mentioned for the last time in the year 1338 BC. So that's probably around when she died or shortly after. And at that time, she would have been over 60 years old.
Pretty good.
Yeah, that's good for that time.
Yeah, I would like to enter speculation station.
Sure.
Not that this whole thing is a speculation station, kind of. But I kind of wondered because Akhenaten is, you know, his queen Nefertiti is really well known. Everybody's heard of her. She's
right.
Incredibly famous Egyptian queen. And apparently there's not a lot of details known about her
right.
for real. But of course, there's a bunch of statues and we're really familiar with her. So he really elevated his queen in a way that was unusual.
Yeah.
And I kind of wondered if, you know, that was because of Amenhotep and Tiye. If he was like, I want what my dad had, or he just was used to, at this point, the dad had recorded the queen so much that he was like, oh, that's what you do with your favorite wife.
Yeah.
You fucking put her name on shit and you make sure people remember her.
Yeah, the great royal wife is an important position
mm-hmm.
and a bomb-ass woman.
Yeah, and I think so, because I think that Pharaoh's wives just had a lot more influence after Tiye, not just running the palace and shit, but like
yeah.
actually entering an opinion about how things should be.
Yeah. Yeah, which is what I think makes this such a, you know, a story that we decided to go with, because this wasn't your average king and queen of England.
This was definitely not an average queen and king of England.
It's considerably, notably different than the standard king and queen of England. This was not your average king and queen of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
These two really stood out and changed things, you know,
yeah.
seemingly for quite a while afterwards. And you know, again, as usual, we could spend our whole night in Speculation Station and go back through time and check our butterflies and see, you know, if we stepped on one, how different would everything be? But we can assume that Egypt might have continued to develop very differently
mm-hmm.
had it not been for the relationship that these two had.
Definitely impossible.
And we might be living in a completely different world today where we're all covered in dirt and eating snails out of the ground because, you know, just if it hadn't been for the two of them, everything would have gone to complete shit.
Damn, eating snails out of the ground.
Look, I'm just saying Queen Tiye was pretty cool, and I like to think she changed things for the better.
Well, I like to think that, too.
Except, obviously, slavery, because clearly they benefited from that for a long time. So, you know, as with any look back in history, you take the good with the bad. And you, as long as you harshly condemn the bad, learn
right.
from it and don't do it again. Stop it.
Stop
That's
it.
That's the best we can do when we look back at these stories.
Has anyone thought about stopping it? Just a thought.
Don't have slaves.
How about that? Just floating the suggestion.
I'll tell you this. Every time people have stopped having slaves, turned out fine.
Worked out.
It worked out.
It worked out.
You know?
People still made money, too, more importantly, because that's always the fucking argument.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
Oh, economically, you can't. No. Everyone still makes money, so shut up.
It's like, how could I possibly afford to pay all these workers to build these enormous pyramids? I'm going to have them do it for free. Okay, time to go sit in my solid gold room where the walls, floor, ceiling, and furniture are all made out of pure gold and eat everything I've ever wanted shipped in from across the globe.
I think any of the unpaid interns were like, yeah, maybe if you didn't bury all the treasure with you in a tomb, we could fucking redistribute it, man.
Yeah, I don't think they were permitted to
I'll just
to
take
voice
one vase.
Opinions.
Can I have one vase?
I could feed my family for 2 months with a vase.
Two generations of
like,
people could eat on this vase.
You're not supposed to have a family.
Do that takes you away from work.
Yeah.
No, you got to make more
You've got
laborers.
A family? Oh, great. Well, hey, they should join our internship program.
Exactly. Bring them with you next time.
We've got great job placement.
Bring your family to work year.
Bring your family to work lifetime.
Yikes.
So again, what do we know of these two? Pretty much everything we just gave you. That's about all there is known, but an important story, an important couple.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty significant romance.
If you're the type who wants to go through all of the various broken pottery and statues that they're looking at to determine all these things, mm-hmm. please feel free. It's not my bag, I'll say that. I like history a lot, but I was like, I cannot read about another cartouche partially destroyed that may or may not have someone's name on it. Like,
this is the other issue, I think, with when you get into Egyptology especially, but any sort of ancient culture, you know, mm-hmm. where history has only begun to be written down mm-hmm. In languages that are long since gone. You know, again, we just get kind of the pieces that made it. You know, somebody might have written Queen Tia's entire story, and then like 6 months later, somebody spilled their coffee on it, and it's gone forever now. That's it. Now no one's ever going to hear of Queen Tia again. You know, so we get what was left over, and brilliant minds who've spent a long, tedious, dull... It ain't Indiana Jones, okay? No, it is a tedious process, deciphering all these symbols, translating these languages, you know, putting these puzzle pieces together. Sounds awesome. If I had devoted, you know, much of my life to anything else, that's probably top seven, somewhere in there would have been like archaeology, because I, you know, I love puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes a lot of focus, and what the scraps that we have are incredible that we have.
Right, right. I was going to say, I mean, you know, you pointed out how long ago this was.
Yeah.
I mean, thousands of years have gone by. So it's amazing that we have any information about them, to be honest. There was one detail I thought was funny where they found evidence that he got gifts during the said festival
mm-hmm.
from, like, not only noblemen, but also, like, smaller merchants and stuff.
Yeah.
And they found it out because of a trash pile outside of one of the palaces that had all these jars in it that had all these different people's names on it. And I was like, that is so funny to think about the trash being full of what is to us, priceless ancient artifacts. You know what I mean? And like just picturing some guy being like, oh, it's from Arnold, like, and throwing it and just tossing it in the garbage. Like, that's insane.
It's, I mean, you know, 4,000 years from now, they find a pile of like wrapping paper and... you know, old Blu-rays, and they're like, oh my God, this was a great king's 13th birthday party.
That's also what I was thinking, was opening the jars and pulling the presents out and someone going, in the bag, now put it in the bag.
Put it in the bag.
Don't leave it on the floor. I'm sick of picking this shit up. Now put it in the bag.
Uh-huh.
But it's a clay jar.
Right. Put it in this larger clay jar.
I'm going to take it out back. Then it'll be clean around here. So, yeah, thousands of years of time have gone by, have smashed up a lot of this shit. But I'm very glad that we have some evidence of TA and Amenhotep III.
Happy to share that story with you all.
Mm-hmm.
Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
We love digging into ancient Egypt. You know,
we'll definitely do it again. Several ancient
pharaohs,
I mean, and queens, as we say.
These
you know.
Two, these the kids. These guys were
and
were
Ramses. And gotta then, do Ramses, as you say.
Out. I mean,
he's the goat.
Rams, like, I'm not even sure if we can get the rights to Ramses' story. Like, this guy is—he's a lot.
He's a lot.
But we're gonna get into that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, please, if you're an Egyptologist or just like us, a dedicated student of the mummy. With Brendan Fraser, then please reach out. We'd love to hear from you. You
definitely.
Can email us at romance@iheartmedia.com.
Or slide into the DMs. I'm at Dynamite Boom on Instagram and Twitter.
And I'm there as @OhGreat, it's Eli.
And we both manage the show's account at Riddick Romance. And don't forget to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It's so nice to see nice things that y'all write, but also it really does help people find the show, and it helps us look like we're doing a good job. So help us look like we're doing a good job.
We love it. Thanks so much, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, can't wait.
So long, friends, it's time to go. Thanks for listening to our show. Tell your friends, neighbors, uncles, and aunts to listen to our show, Ridiculous Romance.